Okay. All right, we'll make a start. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Tzaren Tovim. Before we start, as I've made dedications throughout the time we've been learning, obviously we're still thinking very much about the Chatzofim and about the soldiers. Believe it or not, I think it's in order just to spare a thought for the King of England. I'm really upset about the news. He's been a good friend of Israel. He certainly was very, very close friend of Rabbi Sacks and had a very strong connection in the Jewish community. He's very much involved when Chief Rabbi retired, and he's been to all the various events, you know, significant events of the community. So he deserves our attention. I would say he deserves our tefillot. I hope that things are going to work out for him, because this is not the plan. The Royal Family of England doesn't get sick. They sort of disappear from the scene eventually, but that's about it. So I admire certainly his being outspoken up front with everybody. You know, that also wasn't their style. This would have kept under wraps for a long time. And as I said, I just wish him well, and we should think of him, because he's I would like to call him one of the good guys in the world. Today we're going to deal with kingship. Yet again, we're always getting back to that subject. And the story today of Malkat Sheva. I don't know about you guys. When I was growing up, there was something called... what were they called? They were called epics, these great movies. Solomon and Sheba. Do you remember that? What was it? Victor somebody. I've forgotten who was in it.
Oh, Victor Mature.
Victor Mature. That's the guy. Victor Mature. Yeah, great movie. And you had Samson and Delilah. Yeah, there was always... films. Hollywood was very intrigued, certainly in the late 40s, early 50s, about these biblical stories, and these were good movies. Whether they were accurate or not, that's a separate discussion, and interesting discussion. I'm sure there's a course on it in Hebrew or somewhere. But the reality of the story here is a story, as was just pointed out, is sort of couched in mystery. We read about it, of pleasantries that take place, but we have to ask ourselves what was really going on. What was this all about, right? What's it all about? Because it's challenging. It's not only challenging; it's quite distressing, as you'll see by the end of the story. When she leaves, it's actually quite difficult, and there's what to say at the end. I just want to preface again what I said last week, because this, I think, applies here as well, the red flag. Red flags are flying, okay, all over the place. We had it last week with the story in chapter 9, and a lot of the stuff that was going on was already going in extremes, and today is no exception. Shlomo, the basic concept, as we've said all the way along, he's trying to elevate the material world. It's a root of dilettante. He's taking it from below and trying to elevate it. And he means the Shem Shemayim, no question about it, in terms of his approach. But the problem is that instead of him controlling the surroundings, eventually the surroundings will control him. You'll see next week, if you read ahead, Mitzvah Shem next week to chapter 11, the shocking thing about the end of Shlomo is how quickly he falls away from the scene. David is sort of hanging in there for a lot of time, right? Back at the end of Shmuel Bet, even the beginning of Melachim Aleph, David's still hanging around. Shlomo, chapter 11 begins with Shlomo. By the time we're ending one chapter, he's gone. Right? He's literally out of the picture. And it's very shocking how quickly he falls from grace. And that's going to be a whole discussion again, Mitzvah Hashem, next week. I want to focus also, if we have time, a little bit at the end of this chapter, talking about the throne. Okay? There's a wonderful midrash which I sent out in the handout. Which is called Midrash Abu Gurion. I don't know who Abu Gurion was. Obviously a gentleman of very learned background who put together Midrashim on Megillat Esther. Interesting thing. And at the beginning of Megillat Esther, there's a whole discussion about Ahasuerus sitting on his throne. And the Midrashic text really goes to town, because it says that was the throne of Shlomo. And it gives us here, and I brought it at the end of the handout here, a little bit of a history of what happened to the throne of Shlomo. Where it is today, nobody knows. We have no clue. But interesting thing, you know, just to see how it, as you say in Hebrew, Hishtal Shalut, where did it go from one place to the other, till eventually it ended up in Persia, of all places. But before we get to that, let's see the story of Malkat Shavah. I'm not going to entertain the Midrashic interpretation that this is not a woman, but this is actually a man, believe it or not. The Barbanel brings it. It says, Malkat Shavah, meaning the representative of the kingdom of Shavah. Right? There's obviously a word missing. It should be Netzig, or word at the beginning. But Barbanel says there's a Midrashic suggestion that this is really a man coming to visit Shlomo, but from the story, it's clearly not. And as you'll see by the end, it's very much not. So I'm going to go with the straightforward pshat that we're talking about an amazing woman, a queen of Sheba, Malkat Sheba. We're going to start the Psukim, chapter 10. Shoma et Shema Shlomo l'shem Hashem. She hears the reputation of Shlomo for the sake of Hashem. V'tavol nasato b'chidom. This is very strange. She decides that she's going to test him. And how is she going to test him? With puzzles. I'm amused. My mother-in-law should be gazum, 92 years old. She had a whole group of people in London. This was going back 20 years ago, before they moved to Israel, where every day they would do one of the crosswords. I think it was the Daily Telegraph. And they sort of contacted each other, you know, to get all the clues right. So if they missed out 10 down or 9 across, they would actually be able to phone a friend, like they say in the program, phone a friend and you would get the answer. And they had a whole chabura like this, about 20 people apparently, or something like that, from what I remember, who were clued in to this particular concept. Chidot, people like these challenges, these mysteries. And of course, if we go back in Tanakh, you've got the whole story with Shimshon, how he taunted the Plishtim with the Chidot. He really drove them crazy. We'll see what her underlying question really is. She asks a whole bunch of things to Shlomo, but there's one focus, as we'll see in a minute. Pasuk Bet, Vatavo Yerushalayim, came to Jerusalem. Somebody asked me, what about Yerushalayim? Where's the Yud? Right, the Yud is missing in the word Yerushalayim. So I suggested maybe this is again a sign of things becoming a little bit incomplete. In other words, things are beginning to crumble. The Yud is gone from the word Yerushalayim, symbolically representing that Yerushalayim is going to contract. Why is it going to contract? Because things are not going to be as good as they were, as you'll see by the time we get to the end of Shlomo. And the beginning of Rechavam, Yerushalayim is rejected by 10 of the 12 tribes, which is pretty shocking. So Yerushalayim is beginning to lose its central place. I think maybe that's a remise, I don't know. But it's a thought. Posibet, Tavo Yerushalayim, Bechayel Kavedmo, she brought a whole entourage, Gemalim, and it goes in again. All of the descriptions, very materialistic. Gemalim, Nosim, Besamim, can smell the spices, Zahav, Rav Ma'on, full of gold. Even Yikaran, you know, she raided the bourse over there and brought all the stones and the diamonds, who knows what. Vatavo Shlomo, Vatadabei, love it, Kodasha, Yayim, Levava. And she shared her heart with him. According to Chazal, interesting that she would say something and he would say to her.
They're not seeing you.
Sorry?
They're not seeing you, but if you want to.
Ah, okay. I'm back in the picture. Let me just make it a little bit better. There you go. So, what's happening is that Shlomo is saying, she's talking to Shlomo, and Shlomo is giving her, like a therapist. He can say to her, what is she really thinking? And she's blown away by this. She can't get over it. Shlomo has this ability to, you know, to literally to read the mind. Pretty scary. It's unbelievable. A description here, and I would add, we mentioned a few weeks ago the whole idea of Shlomo without the Melech. Shlomo without the Melech is trying to generate a very personal relationship with this man, right? You'll see by the end it's Melech and Malkah again, right? It wavers because she's coming to Shlomo, if the rabbinic tradition is correct, as you'll see at the end, with a very specific purpose. Right, as we'll see in a minute. So she maybe is trying to engender a certain connection here, something for the future, as you'll see when we get there. Pasuk Gimel, Vayaged la Shlomo, so he's being very buddy with her, right? Et kol devareha, so he told everything that she had said. In other words, he interpreted what she was saying. Lo haya davar ne'elam min ha'melech, nothing was hidden from the king, asher lo yigidla, which he could not tell. In other words, basically whatever she said, he interpreted, he was on the ball. It's an amazing story. Dalit.
Maybe he said what she was thinking when she didn't even say it.
Well, that's it. He was just reading the mind. He was reading the face. Chokhmat ha-partzuf. We mentioned this a few weeks ago. I think there was a Ram in Keren B'Yavna. Did I mention it? Rav Lipschitz, I think his name was. Chaim Lipschitz, who used to read the boys' handwriting and give them advice on the basis of that. There's a Rebbe in New Jersey, well, he comes to New Jersey from Brooklyn, does the same thing. I forgot now who the gentleman was. He came to my son's school in Teaneck. Not a happy situation from that event. I don't think they invited him back because he said some stuff which really was a bit out of order, but if I remember at the time. So people claim, I mean, Shlomo, I suspect, did have this ability to do this, but it's remarkable. He saw everything that was going on, all the Chochmah Shlomo. And the house could be that, the temple, or it could be his own home. You know, she may have been more impressed by the home of Shlomo because he took twice, almost double the time to build it, 13 years. And then he invites her for a meal. So she turns up for breakfast. And remember, 60,000 people. So that's a pretty impressive top table over there. And also how he set up the seating plan, right? Again, if you've ever been in Windsor Palace or any of these places in England, how they sit people at a dinner party is remarkable. They measure literally, every centimetre is measured out where you put the plate and the knife and it's crazy. So he sat all the servant. They all had special clothing. Mashkav, and they had drinks. And everything he says in English, by his ascent, meaning as the person was more choshev, he sat in a more important place. Go figure. In other words, what she saw, she was so blown away, as we say, in the vernacular, she had no spirit, right? The wind was taken out of her sails. Amazing. But so she then says to the king, and again, you can see I would argue, using the word melech here means, you know, is he really going to become my buddy, or do I have to treat him with the pure sense of kingship? She's playing with this. But it was true. I heard all these rumors, and it's all true. That you're smart. Whatever you said, I believe it. Below it, Manti Devar. But when I was there, till I got to Jerusalem, I didn't believe it. Even half of what they said, you know, has not been revealed to me. I saw, in other words, what they were talking about is only half the story in Shiva. It's even more amazing, with more wisdom than I could ever believe. And she gives him a bracha, which is beautiful. Happy are your people, happy are your servants. Those who listen to your wisdom. Right? And again, it's all fine and dandy. May your God be blessed. Letitcha kisei bet Yisrael, made you onto put onto the throne of Israel. Be'avat Hashem et Yisrael olam, that Hashem loved, the God of Israel loves Israel forever. Ve'yisimcha lemelech la'asom mishpat tzedakah. Boy, she's overwhelmed, giving him a fantastic blessing. But yitein lemelech be'av esim kikar zahav, and as a little sweetener, she gave him 120 gold bars. I mean, I don't know what kikar is. You work it out. Like it's probably a ton of weight. Ubsamim, harbei ma'od, and all of these spices, burnishlum, the even yikara, she left it all for Shlomo. Lo, ba, kabosam, ahu, od, laro, that no makat shabal, lemen Shlomo, nothing like it had ever been given before. It was unbelievable. Now, yudal, begam oni chiram, asher nasaza hab me'ofir, there's also the boats of Chiram, we spoke about that last week, that they went to Ophir, which is probably the Persian Gulf. They'd already brought all of this special wood, sandalwood or whatever it was known as, almod, harbe ma'od, emnikar, also a lot of stones, a lot of precious stuff. And you'd bet, vayas ha-melech ha-tzeh mugim mis'ad le-beit Hashem. And he had made some sort of mis'ad, they translated as a path. It was a walkway. If you go again to the Kotel Tunnels, I think they showed in one of their presentations there. Lebeit Hashem, Lebeit HaMelech, there was like this connector between the temple and the house of the king. Kinorot, and I mean, it's all out of control. It's instruments, you know, you've got the Philharmonic playing over there, Nevalim, Lasharim, you've got the singers, you've got whatever choir, you know, if you come from England, you know about the Shabbaton choir, you know, the choirs all over the world. Lo barkein atzel mugim v'loni radiyom hazeh, nothing like it till today. It's all over and above and beyond. Here comes the bombshell. V'amelech Shlomo, finally, and it's now Melech, it's again, we were playing with this, but I think the parting of them is certainly at a malchut level of kingship. V'amelech Shlomo natan l'malkat sheva et kol chefsam. He gave her whatever she wanted. And it's very ambiguous. What does she want? Asher sha'ala, which he had requested, muvada shenatan la kiyad ha'melech Shlomo, whatever else he gave her, as he felt that he should, vatefim vatelech la'atza hiva v'deh, and she turned around and went home. And that's the end of the story. So what is going on? Here is the bombshell, Rashi on Pasuk Yud Gimel. And I'm sorry, apologize if this is going to put you off. Well, you've had your lunch, so maybe it won't put you off your lunch. May put you off your dinner. Mm-hmm. Yud Gimel, Natan the Malkat Shiva. Two interpretations. What did he give? Rashi says, Netina zo eino ela limud chokhma. He gave her, you know, the, what do they call it? The dummy's guide to philosophy, right? Or whatever, the equivalent. He wrote the book, okay? Except it wasn't a dummy. He gave her whatever she wanted, needed to know. But what's kol chefza? And it's in brackets. Now this is a Rashi, which obviously is controversial, because you'll see at the end, it's actually quoted from the Ari. So the Ari is 300 years after Rashi, but it's been put into Rashi, presumably, for a reason. Look at this Rashi, in the bracket. Bo eileo v'nolad mimena Nebuchadnezzar. Wow. What did she want? She wanted to go home pregnant. It's unbelievable. And from that generation that she gave birth to, eventually it came down to Nebuchadnezzar, who, as we all know, destroyed the temple. The seeds of destruction are already sown. It's shocking. And this is how far it's gone. As I said, Shlomo was controlling the surroundings. All of a sudden, it seems that the surroundings are controlling him. She said, this is what I want. I want a son who's going to be as brilliant and as smart and as incredible as you. And this is what she took home with her. Unbelievable. And what did Nebuchadnezzar do? He destroyed the temple. The thing that she was so overwhelmed with, one of the buildings, and the child that they gave birth to eventually destroys it. This is a descendant of this. This is the altar Zayda. But it's the seeds of destruction, right? It's not the actual destroyer, but it's like.
What basis for? When did he get this?
This is again from the Ari. Who knows where he got it from? Arizal is Kabbalistic tradition. Who knows, right? I can't say more than that because I really don't know. But it's just so shocking. And he brings here the numbers. He said, "Shama Tov Yitzchanim." The temple stood for 410 years. The Chelik Shalid Beishvatim in the portion of the 12 tribes, Me Arizal. So there are a few comments like this in Rashi, in Nach particularly. There's an interesting one which is mentioned. I don't know if it's the Arizal, I don't remember now, the end of the Pelegesh Begiva, the end of the book of Shoftim. It says there that the tribe of Benjamin was so decimated that it says 500 of them got on a boat and went to Italy. They had to flee. They fled. And that's the origin of the Italian Jewish community, which, you know, if you go to the Italian shul here in Yerushalayim, they'll tell you how old the community was. It goes back literally thousands of years. And according to that tradition, which is brought in Rashi over there, the end of Sefer Shoftim, that's again not Rashi, but I think it's either Arizal or it could be Rabbi Yosef Karo. They seem to have had this, you know, sort of insight from tradition, Masorah, wherever it came from. But the whole concept here is so shocking. It's shocking that that's what she actually wanted from him. One of the things she wanted from him was to have a child from him, that she could go back and obviously the child will become the king, etc., etc. And it's truly, truly amazing. I want to show you the page in front of you, because the pages. There's a big discussion here, and I quoted this from Yalkut Shimoni, but there's about five different sources. We've been told the story, but we're not really told the story. The psukim say she came, she was overwhelmed, gave him a blessing. If she went home pregnant or not, that's a discussion which, you know, sort of you make your own mind up. It's in brackets, so I leave it at that. But what really went on? What was her purpose? Says Divrei Chidot. She wanted to test him, have some sort of idea of his wisdom in the sharpest and, I would say, deepest way that she could present it. She obviously sort of consulted with her people, right? She had her people behind her. So let's see what it says here. This is the paragraph on page 1. Malkat Sheva shamat shema shlomo v'tavol nasad shlomo b'chidot. She came to test him. So this again is Yalkut Shimoni, collection of Midrashim. It's, as I said, it's brought in a number of places. Ma b'chidot. So the Midrash wants to know, what's going on here? What are the puzzles?
Riddles.
Riddles. The riddles. Amar Rab Yirmiya Bar Shalom. It's so funny. I'm reminded. Gosh, I forget. It's about 20 years ago. There was a movie that came out. It was meant to be a Holocaust movie, and people were very upset about it because it was an Italian movie which had somebody in it who really. People complained that it was making very light of a very serious event. And I've forgotten the name of the actor, but life is beautiful, that's it. And it was about 20 years ago. What was so interesting in that movie, if you remember, was that the Italian guy who was in the camp, or the work camp, wherever it was, had a relationship before the war with a German who eventually became a Nazi. And the relationship was through puzzles. He actually sort of, you know, would meet every day for the guy who's working as a waiter, and he would come over and serve this German guy. And the German guy would always say, what is your puzzle for? Or he'd ask him a question. And then the waiter would go away and come back and give him the answer. They built a relationship on that. Right? Remember, that was one of the interesting things of that film, as far as I remember. And here, obviously, she's trying to build something with Shlomo based on Chidot, based on these riddles. Look at what it says. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Shalom, the end of the first line. Omrale, right? She said to him, Atash Shlomo Shashamati Alecha Amalchutecha Amalohe. Right? Are you really Shlomo? And he said, yeah, that's me. It's a misprint. Go three words along. Omrale, so she said to him, Imanisho Eletava Mita Atamishiva. Are you going to give me an answer if I ask you anything? Omar lo, so he said to her, Ki Hashem yitein chachma mipid, dat u'tchuna, all my wisdom is from God. Alright. Omra lo, so she said to him, here comes test number one. Some of you may know this. Ma'u shiva yotzim v'tisha nichnasim. First riddle, 7 go out, 9 come in. Right? That's what she said to him. Shnayim mozgin, 2 are pouring, as in pouring out liquid. Ve'echad shoteh, 1 is drinking. That was her riddle. Very obscure. Omar lo. So Shlomo said, easy. Bevadai shiva yoitzim hem yimei nida. What is the 7 that go out? The days of nida, when the husband and wife can't come together. Ve'tisha yachei hirayon nichnasim. 9 come in. If the woman conceives after that period, then there's 9 coming in. 9 months of pregnancy. Shnei dadim mozgim. What are the 2 pourings? Meaning, where is the child being fed from the breastfeeding of the mother? And vlad shoteh is the child that's drinking. So even after the interpretation, I'm as clueless as I was before. But this is the conversation. That's riddle number 1. Listen to this. V'od ani shoelet. So she seems to be okay with that. She says, I'm going to ask you riddle number 2. Isha shamra libna. Here comes a really good one. She says that she says to her son, Avicha Avi, your father is my father. This is really strange. Zakeinecha ba'ali, your grandfather is my husband. In other words, who am I talking about, right? Ata b'ni, you are my son, ba'ani achotech, and I am your sister. Who are we talking about here? So Shlomo says, easy. Again, I'm putting the word easy, but you know, for Shlomo it was easy. Omar lo b'vadai b'notav shaloto. This is talking about the daughters of Lot, right? They committed incest with the father, so it turned out that the grandfather was really the father. You know, you can read through that whole list, and you put Lot into the equation, and all of a sudden it makes sense. That's riddle number 2. Here comes rule number three. Va'od dugma acharet ostalo. Right, you know, another example. This one we're going to bring into a focus in a minute. She says the third thing. Hevia zecharim lekevot lefanam. She brought a whole bunch of boys and girls into the room, right? Kulam b'mare echad, they all look more or less the same. Kuma echad, they all seem to be the same height. B'kasut echad, they're all wearing a similar t-shirt, as they say today. Omra le, hafresh li zecharim in lekevot. You know, Shlomo, how do you distinguish between the boys and the girl? Right? Remember back in the 60s when boys started growing long hair, you know, you wouldn't know if you were behind a boy or a girl, whether it was a boy or a girl. So what's going on? Biyad, what did Shlomo do? Easy, he said. I've been to Bar Mitzvah, and I've been to Ofrus. Dead easy. You know what I do? Ramaz the Sari Savaviyue Gozim Uklayon. Let's bring some candies into the room. Right? Like they throw down. And what happens? Mitchil Mechalek Bifneim, and he started giving out the candy. Now, as you can imagine, the boys tend to go a little bit more berserk than the girls. Zecharim Shalayu Mitbayshim and Nodlim Bigdeim. So the boys, they had no shame. They just, you know, filled up their pockets with whatever they could. When the Kevot, Mitbayshot, the girls were a bit more circumspect. Not Lod Basadreim, they would have a little handkerchief and put the candies into the handkerchief. Right? That separates the boys from the girls. Whoa. So I can tell you which ones are the boys, which ones are the girls. That's riddle number three. What are they talking about? And they seem to know. Riddle number four. I'm going to bring you one more example. There's actually a few more in another midrash, but I'm not going to go through them. But they're all on the same line. You'll see in a minute. Another example. She found a whole bunch of people who some are circumcised and some are not. Right, but presumably brought in a bunch of non-Jews or whatever, together with the Jews, and they're standing there. Amra le, she said to him, "Hafreshli molim minarilim." Shlomo, how do you separate those who are circumcised and the ones who are not? So he said, "Ah, I know the answer to this because it was a similar thing that happened in the story of Yeshua, right back in the Sefer Yeshua. Miyad ramaz the kohen gadol, so he called in the high priest, potachet aron abrit to open up the ark." Again, interesting that when they were doing this, because you know the ark was in the Kodesh Kodeshim, whatever. Mehulim shebehem karu b'chatzi kumatam. Those who were circumcised were sort of, you know, bent over halfway. Obviously, what happened was that they were affected by the exposure to the kedusha. V'lo adashin malu peneim zivashkida, and their faces started to shine because they'd had bris. V'areilim, but those who haven't had the bris. Shebahem, Nafla, Panem, they just fell flat on their faces. And then you can tell the boys, the circumcised and the non-circumcised. Miyad, Omar, La, Elam, Ulim, Ela, Rilim. So Omar, so she says to him, Eichem, Lachazeh, how did you know this? Omar, La, Mi, Bilam, if I eat you from Bilam, wow. Dichtiv, Nofer, Begului, Inayim. Bilam felt that he was called a Nofer, someone who fell down. Right? Ilule, Shahaya, Nofer, Lohaya, Roy, Velokun. If he hadn't fallen down, he wouldn't have seen anything. Basically, Bilam was the classic Orel, you know, who's been referred to here. And va'od ne'io b'shar shabo shloshes reyam nachaman. This is a proof from Job. Omar Omra lo. So she said to him, Lo nafel anochi michem kumotchem. Oh, this is the story of Job. All right, Botosha, the final line. Omra lo lo emanti ledvarim. She said to him, you know, I never believed everything that they told me back in my kingdom. Ashrei anashecha yihi Hashem elokecha baruch, may your God be blessed. That was the conversation. Right? What the blazes? What's going on? So, this is beautiful. I'm going to read it to you in the Hebrew, though I've got it here translated in the handout. This is from Rav Ariel, the Sefer that I've quoted you a number of times. And I'll just read it very briefly, what he says. And he puts it so he says, if you think about it, all of these examples are talking about distinctions between two groups, right? Distinctions where things which are covered over, things which are not clear. Even in the thing with Lo, right? In other words, who is Lo? Is he the father, the grandfather, the husband? Yeah, what's going on here? And all of this, he says, is in fact one big message. Listen to that. I'll just read it to you, but I've actually written it up in here as well. He says like this. He says, I'll read it to you in Hebrew. All of those examples, the guys with the Brit, without the Brit, the guys, the boys and the girls, these are all boundaries which are blurred. Hey marot, and they seem shaloni tan lavchin bein amim uminim. Can't really distinguish between one group and the other. Bechitzoniutam shel devarim lo nikar kolevdet. So the same argument she said is regarding the Jewish people. If she felt that the Am Yisrael, what makes you so special? What makes the Jewish people so unique? You look like everybody else. I go in the street, right? I mean, the Nazis made you wear a yellow sign, but otherwise, you know, how do you really tell one from the other? You don't. What makes the Jews so unique? This is what she was asking. She says, Lo nika kolev del ben Yisrael la'amim. Murim ha'arelim. It's like the guy's circumcised and not, unless you do the obvious examination, you won't be able to tell who is who. Umishum kach temua gavatam shel Yisrael. She said to him, why are you then so haughty? Why are you so much better than everybody else? What is the clue to your mindset? It's what she wanted to know. And this is couched in all of these chidots. So interesting. What an amazing conversation. And you know what Shlomo did? Shlomo b'chachmato, says Rav Ariel, Shlomo showed there are distinctions, there are ways of making a difference. He showed that there is a distinction. The reality is, says Shlomo, yes, of course, we're human beings created in the image of God. But the Jew, by definition, has been given a higher purpose. You just read about Matan Torah and the whole concept. And this is what he wanted to say to him. It's not something which is obvious on the outside, but it's something which is intrinsic within the neshama of every Jew. Unbelievable conversation. This is a really philosophical conversation. V'hamulim, I'll just read from Rav Ari a little bit more. Hitmalu b'tkufato mizev ha'shchina. And he showed by the people who were circumcised, they were radiating the Shechina, right? Because that was a sign of inner holiness. They'd been exposed to the Oran and they started beaming. Who ivchin ben zacharin in the kevod, and also with the boys and the girls, he made a distinction. Ve'rash afilu kashay tashtashur gvulon. Even if there were boundaries which were blurred, lo ishtana. Just reading this, mahutam hapnimit. The inner difference was not something which was blurred. It was clear, and with benot lod and all the rest of it, it's unbelievable. And what happens is with Malkat Shavah. She's asking a very fundamental question. What makes the Jews so special? She came to Jerusalem, she heard about Shlomo, and she saw the proof, and she wanted to know what really makes you work. What's it all about? And the exchange of Chidot was to bring this question into focus. When you have groups and you're not sure what's going on, who is A and who is B, or who is group 1, who is group 2, by definition, that suggests that the boundaries are very blurred. And says Shlomo, no, I can prove in every situation that a distinction occurs. A distinction occurs, and in terms of the Jew in the world, there is something very unique, very special. And it comes up not very often when I always refer to this because it's something that made such an impression. 1965. Churchill died, Winston Churchill, and he was buried on a Shabbat, and like now they had the coronation on Shabbat, but that time it was a Leviathan, and everybody has to come. And Israel sent two people. They sent David Ben Gurion, and they sent Zalman Shazar. Shazar, the president of the state of Israel at the time, was Shomer Shabbos. Ben Gurion, we know, wasn't, but in public they respected Shabbat. That's the rule which they go out into public, even to this very day. And what happened was, so interesting, is that the pictures of the funeral, the entourage following the body, there's one picture of a very big black car, and two people walking behind the car, with two Secret Service guys, and those are the two Israeli diplomats. They, by definition, had to be at the Levaya, but they were walking from wherever where it started from to where it got to Westminster Abbey. It was about, I don't know, maybe a mile. And they were walking behind the car because by definition, when they are exposed to the world, they are showing a standard of what the Jew represents in the world, or what the Jew represents, should represent in the world, right? We look the same, but we're different. And it's fascinating. In fact, there's even a picture online, if you try and find it, of David Ben-Gurion and Chazal walking back to their hotel after the Leviathan with some Secret Service, Israeli Secret Service and British Secret Service. And it's just a fascinating picture that they're walking through London together, and there's no Arab in London, so you can't carry. So that Shazar is not carrying. Ben-Gurion's got some sort of peckle under his arm. Maybe he didn't know there wasn't an Arab. I don't know. Now they're, well, even that area, I'm not sure where they were walking exactly after the funeral. But just fascinating. Again, this is the concept that Malkut Shavua is really trying to come to terms with. The uniqueness of the Jewish message to the world. And it's something today which, you know, we're still struggling with. This is what we struggle with the whole time. When there's a tragedy in the world, Israel is out there. The Haiti and the Turkey, and well, Turkey, they won't be allowed in there. But, you know, the South Africa needs help, and they won't allow them in either. All these places which need, and some places have benefited enormously. The story of Haiti, the earthquake there was incredible. And all of that, by definition, is what Malkut Shavua was trying to understand. And Shlomo was saying to her, yes, we are intrinsically different. And we have a message to give to the world. And she accepted, she goes away. And if you say that she went away pregnant, wow. Did she convert? Did she bring Judaism there like Yisro? You know, what happened to Yitro after he left Moshe? Big question mark. Did he convert? Did he not convert? It's a whole discussion, a whole debate for another time. It's fascinating. It's so interesting, but my argument, my super argument on top of everything else, is to say things are beginning to, you know, the threads are beginning to undo over here. That by indulging in this kind of interaction with Malkut Shavua, there's a warning sign. There's an intimacy that's going on here, which maybe is the sign, and certainly the presence and the opulence, everything that's happening here, all of that is sending a message, is sending a warning sign to the Jewish world. When you interact with people like the Queen of Sheba, you know, it's got to be done with boundaries. With Shlomo, you'll see, by the time we get to the next chapter, there's no boundaries anymore. Yeah?
What happened to his wisdom?
What happened to his wisdom, eventually? I tell you something, it's an interesting thing. You know when you learn Musa, if you ever go to yeshiva where they did Musa, my yeshiva learned Musa every day. The Musa guys always talked about them, right back into Reb Salanta and beyond. They talked about the Rosh and the Lev, right? The head and the heart. And the whole idea of Musa was to get the head to control the heart. And sometimes, and many times, the heart does in fact control the head. You'll see in chapter 11, next week, Mr. Shem, you'll see that Shlomo, the word that repeats itself over and over again is Lev. It must come in chapter 11 probably a dozen times. The word Lev, because in the end, he thought that his intellectual status of his brain, of his thought process, could control his heart, and he got it wrong. Right? There's a message there. There's a really strong message. It's a Musa message, but I don't like doing Musa, but you know what I'm saying. The reality of Shlomo is a warning, right, to the leadership of the Jewish people, that if you play the game your way, and expand the boundaries. You're only supposed to have 18 wives. You want 1,000? And you're only supposed to have so many horses, and you want 40,000 horses? And all the money in the world, and there's going to be a price to pay. Because you, Shlomo, with all of your wisdom, and you think that the Rosh controls the Lev, in the end, unfortunately, it's going to be the other way around. And we'll come to that Mitzvah Shem next week. I just, looking at the time, and I'm really running out of time, I just want to talk about this Midrash Abba Gurion, and it's on the third page of the handout. Because after we get the story Malkut Shavua, there's a whole description again of more and more opulence, the shields made out of gold. Whoa, it just goes on and on and on. Pasuk Yudchet, Vayasa Melech Kisei Shem Gadol, the king made a big throne made out of marble. Vayitzapeo Zav Mufaz covered in gold. Sheish Ma'alot the Kisei, 6 steps going up. Verosh Agul the Kisei Mecharal, and some sort of circular thing on the back of the throne. V'yodot izel mizel makom hasheven. There were sort of handles there on both sides. Ushnayim arayot ondot etzel hayadot. And there were lions on both sides. It's unbelievable, and it's just out of control. This, and the Chazal say that there's levers, or as you call it, levers and pulleys, and you know the basic physics that's going on here is very advanced. Shlomo apparently, according to Chazal, knew the mechanics of how to build an engine. Right? In fact, he was about 2,000 years ahead of the 2,500 before the car came along, but he knew how to put an engine together. Okay, which is pretty amazing. And it goes on, just look, Pasachav, Ushneimas, Arayim, and then there were 12 lions, and there was Shesha, Malot, sit on the stairs, Mizea, Mizea, it goes on and on. And the shields of gold, everything is totally over the top. It's beyond. It's above and beyond. And by the time you get to the end of the chapter, look what it says right at the end here, and you can read all this to yourself, where all this is coming from. Even with the horses, etc. Vatale, Vatetim, Erkavim, and Mitzrayim, B'sheish Miokesem, he would bring up chariots costing 600 pieces of silver, V'sus B'chamishim U'meyah, and horses coming for this price, V'chein L'chol Malki Echitim, Malki Aram B'yadam Yotziv. Unbelievable, all this stuff coming, more and more and more material things coming. I don't know how to describe it. Just very quickly, just to show you a little bit of this Midrash Avigurim, because it's so interesting. It talks about the Sheish Ma'alot, we just said the six stairs, and the Midrash takes it as six individuals who had the throne after Shlomo died. And the first part of this section of Midrash describes where the throne went. It went to different countries, eventually ended up in Persia. And that's how the Midrash sort of links it to the story of Purim. But very, very interesting. At the bottom here, where it's underlined, it's about 10 lines from the bottom. Kishemelech Daryovish Hevi Chachamim Lasok Kamoto. Daryovish wanted to make a similar throne. Lo Yochlu Lasok Kamoto. They couldn't do it, right? His engineers were unable to make the throne of Shlomo. And it says, Vafa Pike Lo Yashav Alav. They tried, but he wouldn't sit on it. Ukshaalach Ashverosh, but no. When Achashverosh came along, Zeh. He started trying to make the throne with special stones and pearls and God knows what. Unseen by, and nothing seen like it for, and by any other king. And he goes on and on, just turn over the page, just the bits that I've underlined. And it says, the second line, so this was the wheel that was turning because of when you walked up the stairs, there was the lions would be moving. They'd be on some sort of apparatus that would turn. On every step, there was animals which would turn towards you or not. And it goes on, all the incredible things. There was this tavas, which is a bird, a special bird, and the sharim at the end of the line, parasim gapehem, with wing eagles spreading their wings, and oh, Gevat, it's just unbelievable. And look at the fourth line. Yonah Shazahab, there was a gold Yonah, a gold dove. Yoredet min Amud, Potachet Aron, would open the ark, whatever they had there, the Aron. Menotelet Atarah, they had a Torah there, because presumably Shlomo, part of the whole throne, was to contain the Torah, which the king had to have with him as part of his requirement. And this was now in the palace of Achashverosh. And it will take the Torah, Ari Poshet Yado, Notel Atara, and the lion would carry the crown of the Torah. It's just truly, truly unbelievable. And again, it's a shame because I really wanted to spend a little bit of time, but my comment at the bottom, unbelievable description here, full of knowledge of physics and other science, opulence in the extreme. Took Achashverosh 3 years working on the throne to get it into a workable situation. It still wasn't like Shlomo's throne. All building up to the incredible fall from grace of Shlomo in the next chapter. We've built the edifice of materialism so high that when Shlomo falls, wow, it is shocking in the extreme. Food for thought, it really is. It really is something. And the story of Queen of Sheba, it's mind-blowing and it's incredible how it looks so positive. But as I said, the cracks in the facade are there. To be continued, Bezrat Hashem, next week. I hope everybody got a little taste of what I was trying to get over here. Mitzvah Hashem, chapter 11. Thank you very much, everyone. Sure.